officially welcomed into 2015 together with Red Ice Radio. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Henrik. I hope you're having a good day today. It's great to have you here. Our website is redicecreations.com and redice.radio.net. We are going to open up this year by giving some focus to my homeland, Sweden, a recurring theme on this program, as you probably know if you're a regular listener. And we do this due to the massive transformation that the country has been going through in the last 30 years. Really, as a study of how the elite can destroy something to teach other nations, as a warning, as a lesson of what not to do. Sweden has been a political laboratory completely run by an establishment hell-bent on utterly ruining the country in any possible way. They have, I believe, not only ruined it for years, but possibly for generations to come if we don't clean up this mess. We're also heading into this direction because this year the foundational law, the constitution really, of Sweden has been changed in order to be able to squeeze out our more independent and alternative media sources, like Red Ice Radio, to target them due to the criticism that they aim at the state and the establishment and what has been happening. And as you might recall, we were censored from Apple's iTunes during autumn last year, so you know we are not new to this, but it could take things into a new direction in terms of the rise of the new media. The tyranny and the state oppression in Sweden is actually pretty hard for people to comprehend, to fully comprehend from the outside. It is largely invisible, and it's of a very different nature than the gulags of the Soviet Union. It's more subtle and much more psychological in nature. So the establishment has now changed the laws to be able to begin a process of censorship that I think primarily is going to be directed towards those on the internet. It's been so successful, in fact, in the last few years in Sweden because our media is so heavily controlled by the state. So, with us today to talk about many other problems with Sweden and Swedish society, we have Fredrik from the website SwedishSurveyor.com. He is a younger guy who recently started the website, and he does a great job reporting on many of the troubling issues and the surrounding themes. So, we'll begin to talk a little bit more about Fredrik and introduce him that way. So, stay with us as we get going. Hey, Fredrik, welcome. Thank you so much for coming on the program with us. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you bet. I've been following your website here just for, I think, just a couple of weeks, basically. But it's great that you've started it up. We need more people writing and exposing the insanity and absurdity in Sweden to be able to turn some of the tides. I mean, I've been talking about this for some years now, and there hasn't I would call that the early days, and there wasn't that many people doing this. I felt pretty isolated in the criticism, so I wanted to, of course, to bring on people like you to encourage the fact that these are issues that we need to talk about. We need to focus on them. We need to have the Swedish people waking up to the insanity that is occurring around them instead of sticking their heads in the sand. So I think this is very important. So as a way into this, tell us when and of course why you wanted to start SwedishSurveyor.com.
Well, I mean, it was actually right before the election. I was studying at university, and I didn't want to follow it because I'm easily distracted, and I had a gut feeling that it was quite chaotic. And then I voted blindly for Moderaterna, and then I had dinner with my grandparents. And they came by, and they said, "Who are you voting for?" And I said, "Oh, Moderaterna, of course." And they said that they voted for SD. And then straight away, I got silent, and I looked around me in the restaurant, and you know, I told them to hush because it was so ingrained in my mind that this was a very negative thing, and you know, brought thoughts to the Nazis and fascism and racism and so on.
The Swedish Democrats, for those who don't know, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The Sweden Democrats were the only anti-immigration party in Sweden, who have their roots in the White Power movement and so on, which is constantly said in the media. And then I started reading up, and then the more and more I realized that I had not been receiving correct information. And then when I heard about your radio channel, for example, or Dispatch International, all these dissidents, I thought, you know, they were lunatics beforehand. And then when you start reading about it, you realize that it's so extreme what's going on that you think that it's not true, because it can't be. You know, this is not in Sweden. It can't be happening.
Well, that's good. So your grandparents had an eye on the ball. And did you ask them a little bit more about, you know, at the time, like, why? I mean, my God, my grandparents are racist. I can't believe this.
Well, I didn't really want to talk about it because we were in a public place. I mean, it was that that extreme. It was something you didn't want to display. And the strange thing is, I've been working I've been living abroad. You know, I've been all over the world, and I've worked as a door-to-door salesman in Sweden as well for several months. So I've been in every single ghetto and suburb, ranging from the north to the south. So I've seen, you know, the side effects of the immigration policies, but you don't really take it in. It's like you're made to think that this is no problem, you know, that immigration is good and so on.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to write about all the crazy things happening.
Exactly, and that's great. It's good to have it in English as well, because one of the issues here is, you know, obviously the most important thing, I think, is to try to wake up people in Sweden, but at the same time, it's really important to wake people up on the outside of this, because Sweden is very much, I believe, a spearhead country, and I think what's happening in Sweden is something that the establishment is seeking to bring in later to the wider, you know, Western world, so it's important to focus on that as well. But how would you explain it to someone who, let's say, hasn't, you know, been to Sweden? Everything they get in the papers is practically kind of just what you expect. I mean, everything is great in Sweden. It's a role model country. They're very, you know, neoliberal in that extent. They're very open, and of course, everything that happens is good. It's only that we have these very difficult problems with the rise of nationalism, like the Sweden Democrats, etc. That's the only kind of fault in Sweden. But how would you explain a more accurate situation to someone who hasn't been to Sweden for themselves?
Oh, wow, that's if I didn't know about all these problems, what I would have formally said, you know, is that it's very beautiful in the center of the cities, and that there's a bit of a problem in the suburbs. But if I was to explain it, 90% of the population growth in the past 10 years has been immigration, while the birth rates are extremely low. So what's essentially happening right now, I mean, if you believe in the concept of an ethnic Swede, then you have population replacement levels of immigration. And even though I'm not fully Swedish ethnically, so to speak, I believe that they do, that an ethnic Swede exists, you know, that it's a real thing.
Yeah.
And it's so extreme now that this country is turning into a very different place very fast. That we have 55 no-go zones so far where the police avoid entering. And they've stopped counting these zones now because, you know, it's bad publicity. You can get shot in some of these places. When I was working as a door-to-door salesman, I heard, for example, in Rosengård, my boss told me, he's Syrian, how they were there, and they were all immigrants except this one Swedish salesman, and he got shot at, you know, because he was Swedish.
Yeah.
So as in some of these, this is very territorial. You could almost say that some of them are, you know, parallel societies, so to speak. So it has gone quite far in some zones.
Yeah, I mean, I think the ethnocentrism has been completely, you know, bred out of the Swede. I think that there's no recognition or understanding whatsoever that they are something that all the other people are not, right? There's been a war on not only biology, but, you know, human nature and all these issues. And I think that it is a cultural kind of hijacking that has occurred in Sweden, which has led to the scenario that we now see. But if we just for a moment compare that, for example, with the mentality of some of the immigrants that are coming into Sweden, we can see that while Swedes lack any kind of, you know, shred of ethnocentric, you know, consciousness, it can be very, very strong among the immigrant groups that comes in. And I think that's is also one of the parts that are creating a lot of these problems, that there's two, literally, not only cultures, but two worlds that are colliding completely.
Yeah, no, it's becoming incredibly strange, you know, and you have, for example, in Somalia, you have a lot of tribes, and that's being transferred over here with the different tribal groups are creating their own meeting places and different groups even within that group, so to speak. And you know, the Kurds identify as Kurds, Palestinians as Palestinians, and the Swedes don't really identify as Swedes. It's like the concept doesn't exist. I think it's important that we admit that it does. You know, my father is very, you know, an intelligent man, and he's half Swedish and half something else. When we talk, you know, he gets very angry because I think he's grown up in a society where he was always the minority. So I don't know. I think it's important that we just, what difference does it make if I'm not fully Swedish? Why can't I admit that they exist? You know, it's,
yeah.
And sometimes it's like we let the other, you know, non-ethnic groups define Swedishness, and it's accepted in the media, and it becomes very strange. I mean, it's like if you added 1.5 million Swedish people to Japan's population each year, and then all of a sudden 30% of Japan's population is Swedish, you know, ethnically, and then they're starting to define Swedishness. You know, it just seems a bit absurd. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. No, but I've always liked to make the comparison with other countries and other nations, and we brought it up many times before, but it's worth doing it because it's really about exposing the double standards that this is something that's happening in Sweden that I think would not be accepted in many other countries, actually, outside of the Western world. I mean, just look at how, you know, the reactions from the worldwide community when China was invading with the Chinese into Tibet, for example, and these are still very fairly closely from an ethno, you know, perspective, they're fairly close. They're both Asians, etc. There are similarities between these cultures, even what have you. But yet there was a major uprising. Here we have a population replacement happening in Sweden, and as soon as you raise your voice about that, you know, they try to put these labels on you to shout you down, and they don't realize that this that's taking place, if this was to occur in any other country, there'd be outrage. There'd be absolutely they'd be screaming from the rooftops to end the semi ongoing genocide that is occurring. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because if we had this, you know, conversation in Swedish, you know, people would start calling you, you know, me racist and so on. I'm very glad that I'm not entirely Swedish because I feel like I'm more able to talk about this. It's crazy because, I mean, the first time I went partying, you know, was in Ethiopia when I was 16, and I was the only white guy, and, you know, I have no problem if our prime minister was, you know, black. You know, all that matters for me is competence. Like, I have very few friends who are ethnic Swedes, but I still don't see how, why we can't admit that the concept exists. I mean, why is that so strange? It sounds so, in English, it becomes absurd. People don't think that this is real, but this is how it is over here. I talked to a friend about, you know, this whole feminism and the differences between males and females, you know, just biologically, that there are some differences. And straight away, you know, he said, oh, you're a race biologist. That's what you sound like. So, it's very different here.
They have all these terms, you know, ready to go and labels to slap on you. And I think the problem is that people are still kind of caring about those things, which is unfortunate. I think we just have to get to a point where we just simply don't care about that. We own it or whatever, just whatever. You can call me whatever you want. Doesn't matter. The fact is, these are important issues that needs to be addressed. And the fact is, Are Swedes not worth to preserve in the same way that we've heard that other cultures need to be preserved? I mean, globally, Swedes are a minority. We are very few in the world. Same thing with the Norwegians and the Danes and the Finns and the Icelanders, etc. And yet, there's no sense of preservation. It's like Swedish culture now has become a culture which is of accommodating all the other cultures, and we step to the side to give place to them as opposed to, you know, looking after ourselves, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, one thing you have to take into account is, of course, you know, this is 2014 and we have much more capability to travel and live all over the world nowadays. And then, you know, I'm fine with, you know, cultures aren't something static. But the fact is, we have to admit that now it's going very, very fast. As the very wise Minister of Migration said, Morgan Johansson said, oh, but it's only 1% of the population that's coming in 2015. And, you know, you might get the new Zlatan. And no, just making it, oh, it's only 1%. But I mean, God, you know, if that was in the States, that would be, what, like 13 million people? Or No, what am I saying? 3 million people coming in. But 1%, oh, that doesn't sound so bad. Obviously, this is going to have changes which are going to happen very fast in my lifetime, you know, in the next 10 years. So
the long-term projections, that's what we have to look at here as well. And that's what population replacement, that agenda is all about. It's about looking in the, you know, the expansion of the population. And as we know, we've hit a point where you have a lot of kids among the immigrant population and very few among the Swedes. And there's different reasons for this. I mean, I've heard both the Swedish Democrats talking about this, that there, you know, there's incentives within the economic structure in Sweden. But then I just wanted to bring in something else. And this, we heard, you know, in the Western world back in the 70s and the 80s that, you know, we were heading for, you know, a population, overpopulation. It would be a complete chaos if we continued on the path that we were on. And it seems to me that, you know, the Western world kind of adopted some of this. It took some of the responsibilities here and said, okay, you know, whether this was conscious or not, or if this was, you know, education, or if it was programmed into people, that I don't know. But nonetheless, we saw a little bit fewer kids being born into each family. In some cases, just maybe the one child or what have you. And then, but at the same time, now it's like we hear that if we don't bring in immigration, it's like we're not going to survive economically. Now, this is the issue, despite that we know that, for example, Denmark actually cut their immigration to be able to save money because it costs so much. So there's like these numerous double standards in the reasons that we're given for why this is occurring.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on who you talk to. I mean, it usually goes back to the humanitarian aspect. I was talking to, debating with a guy working at NEO, this newspaper, and we were talking about this. And he would always, in the end, he would kind of compare it to tearing down the Berlin Wall, you know, with how we shouldn't have borders, how this is, we are the ones, you know, taking the new step towards, you know, it's like a Berlin Wall. That's how we describe the EU. And he was saying how, oh, are we just going to tell the people fleeing from war and terror in Syria to wait? Those were the level of, you know, very emotional arguments that they always go back to. So,
Yeah, and
we're a humanitarian superpower. We're very rich. And that's not really true. You know, we're one of the most indebted countries in the world. We have the government debt is quite low comparatively, but the household debt is something like, you know, 266% of our incomes. So we're not that rich.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Wow. And you said it was in comparison with, it was worse than Greece even.
Yeah, I mean, Greece has a government debt of 150% of the GDP, but the companies and the household debt is 140%. Sweden has a kind of reverse situation where the government debt is very low, so we appear to be doing very well. But instead, the companies and households have 266% in 2013, unless I'm not mistaken. So the so-called strong economy here is built on debt. And I think, you know, in part that stems from the housing bubble and the fact that the interest rates are very low to loan money.
Yeah.
So this isn't a problem as long as the economy is doing well. I mean, what I fear is that we will have a situation in a couple of years' time with, you know, 500,000 asylum seekers or what have you, who all of a sudden can't get as much money, you know, and this entails, you know, risks.
Yeah, it does. And Swedes are naive. They don't really realize that that everyone isn't the same. Everyone doesn't. I mean, we've seen that already with many of the riots that have occurred in not only Malmö, but in Stockholm as well, in Gothenburg. Lots of burning of cars, etc. And Swedes are different in that way. We're not, you know, in the 90s when we had our banking crash, you didn't see young Swedes go out in the street and throwing, you know, firebombs everywhere and complaining. They sought other alternatives. Some of them went to Norway. Some of them started going back to school. They're culturally very different. And that's, again, something that is not being recognized. That there are, yes, human beings have cultural differences between us as we have, you know, biological, etc. and things like this. And it feels like when we try so hard to impose this kind of fallacy of everyone is the same issue, then that's really when the big problems begin to arise. And I don't think we've seen these problems fully kind of manifest themselves yet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the problem is now is that such a big portion of the Swedish population is not ethnically Swedish. So, I mean, now it's not, I mean, just because someone is an ethnic Swede doesn't mean that they're not, Swedish. This is the distinction that has to be made. I mean, I have, a friend from the Congo, like fully ethnically Congolese and fully ethnically Indian, two friends, and, they're much more Swedish than I am, and many of my blonde and blue-eyed friends. But it all goes back to, but just because, does that mean that ethnic Swedes don't exist? I mean,
of course not.
It's this kind of fear that by admitting the fact that different ethnicities exist, then you'll create more rifts in society. I mean, just the other day you had these youngsters throwing Molotov cocktails at the police in Rågsved. And, they were all let go because you didn't want to, incite hatred in the population. So you have a very forgiving attitude here.
Yeah, it's a pathological forgiving attitude.
Yeah, and I can understand the immigrant groups. I came to Sweden when I was, after I'd lived abroad when I was, I think I was 13. And I was treated, even though I'd been speaking Swedish in my household, I was treated like an immigrant would be. And it was very condescending. It was this kind of, this is a cake. This is the different areas in Sweden. And I got very angry then. And I can imagine that it's the same thing for, kids coming from the Middle East when they're 13 and 14. And then they're faced with this, very condescending attitude, veiled with good intentions. And I can see how that creates rage and hatred between the ethnic groups. I think it's very dangerous over time when you have a situation where you don't feel Swedish because the stereotype is you're supposed to be blonde and blue-eyed. You grow up in one of these outsidership zones and you see all these, stereotypical Swedes living in the rich neighborhoods. I mean, you're creating ethnic tension.
Yeah, and also at the same time, then they're fighting so hard to remove that. I mean, I think that the dumbing down, really, that you're talking about is something that I experienced that across the board, too. It's a complete, every time you went to, a government institution or, talk with someone on a state official level, a bureaucrat, or encountering them, I got to say that it had nothing to do with, me being Swedish or not. I think it was just, it's an attitude within the state itself that it's like they're treating you like you're a retard, and to a certain extent, you become a retard in that type of environment too. When there's there's no intellectual challenging, and everything becomes, I don't know, it's very difficult to explain that environment. It's something that has, I think, occurred over many, many years of the type of cultural Marxist socialism that is imposed on people, and it's almost like it's a caring attitude to a certain extent that wants to take care of you, but it does. So to the point of where it becomes a disadvantage to the people who live within that system, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost, this kind of attitude that's, well, they can't be expected to take care of themselves. It's the same with the Romani, the condescending word, gypsy, at the moment in every single Swedish town. Since Romania joined the EU, you have a beggar outside of every store, and it's clearly organized. And then when they talk about banning, it's this kind of, no, but they're very poor and, this kind of, the only option they have in life is begging and they need to be taken care of. And I mean, that attitude is problematic because eventually it's very easy to become used. The government institutions can be abused. If I know as a criminal that the police don't dare, do anything, then I'll, be more liable to commit crime. It seems pretty obvious.
Yeah, exactly. It's incentivized. Now, let's kind of tackle some of the issues of what has happened more recently in Sweden as well, to just kind of get to the core of the absurdity. We, of course, have spoken a little bit about the population replacement, agenda, and again, the long-term projections, 2, 3, 4 generations down the line, you have a completely different demographics if this continues and if this trend continues. But, if no one is Swedish, what does that matter, right? We're all
As long as the integration works very well, then, it doesn't matter if you're, you have a different skin color, you know. But right now you have a problem where we're taking people from the third world and then we're placing them in different ghettos and then they're growing up in this, you know, ghetto culture. And of course there will be those who succeed, no doubt. But I mean, by and large, you'll create a lot of hatred problems.
Yeah, exactly. The long-term issues here, and I think it's by design. And because if we can get into that a little bit more later, but let's talk about what happened with. I wanted to get your take on what happened with the government thing recently here, with the fall of the social democratic government that came in, and now swiftly after this, the financial proposition was rejected by the other parties, which is a prerequisite for the government to be able to continue. So the prime minister decided to go for another vote here, March 22nd. Why did this happen?
Well, I mean, the red government, Löfven, was the leader of that group, and he was a social democrat, and he decided to go to work together with the environmental party. It's called the Miljöpartiet, and it's a very friendly and nice-sounding name here that a lot of people in my generation vote for. You know, because they have the "we want to save the world from global warming" kind of thing.
Right.
But the problem is that they're also an extremist party, and they want completely open borders. And for some reason, they've, you know, made immigration their main focus. It becomes very strange because, you know, the carbon footprint. If we take people from poor countries and take them to Sweden, where everyone wants a new cell phone, and anyway. The Sweden Democrats, no one wanted to cooperate with them. They refused to cooperate with them. And then the Sweden Democrats saw no reason but to vote, no option but to vote against the socialist government's budget. And then Löfven, the prime minister, chose to call for a snap election. That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, that's about it. That's going to be really interesting to see where things go next year. But I think it's important to point out the ostracization of the Swedish Democrats, or Sweden Democrats, whatever you want to call them, the English term. But nonetheless, it's been, I mean, they literally have come to a point where, I mean, about 13% voted on these people, voted on this party in the last election here. And that's a major, win for them. They're now become the third largest party in Sweden because they're the only ones that are looking at this issue, and there is a reason for that, and the other ones are completely just refusing to talk about it. They're refusing to even talk and discuss with the people who have the capability, like we now saw with the financial issue that led to the coming re-election. That one of the guys here that was the standing spokesperson for the Swedish Democrats, because I believe it was the current leader, Jimmy Åkesson, he was actually sick or something like that. But nonetheless, he was in a position where he could do this. But the Social Democrat leader, Löfven, he refused to meet with them and actually discuss the issue and see what was going to happen. And this mentality of, like, it's like a kindergarten mentality where you run away with your eyes in front of your ears and eyes and just try to get away from the situation. It's extremely childish, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is, you need a historical aspect to understand the current situation. The Sweden Democrats, they do stem from the white power movement and these keep Sweden Swedish, these kind of not necessarily it's almost a neo-Nazi offshoot, you know, back in the day in the 90s. They were never the Sweden Democrats were never openly neo-Nazi, but some of their members had those sentiments, and then over time they started clearing out of the party, getting rid of all those people, and then they have had lots of scandals on the way. But essentially what's happened is that they've managed to monopolize on the issue of immigration. So all the other parties have said, due to their history and all the scandals, that they will never cooperate with the Sweden Democrats. And they've said this openly. And the problem is that the Sweden Democrats have used this to their advantage. And they sometimes come with, not necessarily extreme, but proposals which are considered extreme, and they use a terminology which they know that the other parties won't approve of. And then they refuse to cooperate with them, and then the Sweden Democrats get a MAR2 role, and they get to take on the most important issue Sweden is faced with. But this, of course, doesn't excuse the bullying and ostracization in the media and how badly they're treated. I mean, Jimmy Åkesson, you know, he got sick because he was so bullied by the media. You know, they hacked into his bank accounts and, you know, saw that he had a gambling problem and exposed that. And, you know, people calling them racist and death threats and, you know, they've been attacked as well. Several of the representatives, even an immigrant representative in Malmö, a guy of non-Swedish origin, you know, has been attacked, you know, fucking Nazi, you know, that's the kind of attitude.
Yeah.
No, but that's they're treated with.
Well, exactly. And you just got to clarify that. I mean, even despite all the labels put on them, it's never been established that they were in any kind of way a Nazi party or associated with that. Sure, there's guilt by association, classic fallacies because of some of the people that were attracted to the party. But even the zealous movement of Expo that we have in Sweden, for example,
even
they have not established that they have these kinds of roots. It's just it's ridiculous, you know. And the fact is that whatever ground they potentially stand on, or whoever person was, you know, attracted to the party in the early days, that should not take away from the sincerity of what they're addressing today, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, people are starting to see through the mainstream media and the politicians, and I think it's very dangerous, especially of the media, when they're choosing not to report on the issues or choosing to skew it. For example, when Britain had a report, whereas non-European immigration was very expensive, whilst immigration within the EU was beneficial. When this was written about in Dagens Nyheter, one of Sweden's biggest paper, they wrote, the headline was, immigration is beneficial to Britain.
Right.
You know, and they have a Sandviken report. It's a report from a municipality in Sweden where that was actually not true. It was simply a lie, whereas immigration was beneficial to the economy. And then they still have that to this day. So people are fed this idea that it is great for the economy, even though, you know, all the economists in Sweden have said, no, it costs between 2 to 8% of the GDP each year.
Yeah. And I doubt, you know, numbers wise, there is even a lot of things you can hide behind that, because I mean, just look at the industry that has risen around, you know, immigration in Sweden, because we have a housing shortage, for example. So all these people don't have a place to live and stay. I mean, I read something yesterday about some of the statistics here that, you know, when immigrants came into Sweden, they thought it was like, well, they're going to get an unfair disadvantage, you know, because they have to come into a competitive housing market. So they can get to jump ahead of the queue, for example, with people who might have stayed in queue. Swedish people have stayed in queue to get an apartment for 15, 20 years in some cases, right? And these other people get an advantage. I mean, this is insanity. This is like spitting on your own people, spitting them in the face and say, you're not worth anything. And anyone else that's coming to Sweden are better than you. And I mean, it's to a certain extent, it's like this, it's like a supremacy ideology.
Yeah,
really,
but it's creating a lot of problems. It was just the other day, you know, there was this completely absurd story that I wrote about with the, I mean, it sounds too ridiculous to be true almost, and but it was the fire department in Skåne, Malmö. They to counter the fact that ambulance drivers and fire trucks are being attacked with rocks, and some of them have been, you know, attacked with machete wielding thugs. They're trying to create quotas with, you know, employing people with non-Nordic background to the fire, and this could be okay, but they couldn't find anyone. So, and I kid you not, that they said, oh, well, this guy has made an amazing journey. And it was this guy that had, you know, in 2003, he'd robbed a Danish couple. And then one of the people in the group, I'm not sure if it was him, raped the woman, you know, in front of the guy. And then less than 5 years later, he was, you know, employed to this integration project at the fireman agency. And he's going to start working there in January.
Excellent.
And at the same time, ethnic Swedes, you know, they're disadvantaged threefold. They have to take a 2-year course at the fire department instead of this 10-month crash course for immigrants. And they will get chosen second to them, and they'll probably need an impeccable record.
Absolutely, exactly. And it's turned into an idea where they say, well, you know, skin color doesn't matter, right? But at the same time, the opposition is radically obsessed with it, and they think that just because you do have a different skin color, now all of a sudden you have, advantages that no one else has. And it becomes these diversity hires, as they call it, and it becomes about trying so hard to get rid of Swedes. I mean, look at even, Mona Sahlin, the way that she talked about these things, that she literally talked about the problem with Sweden are the ethnic Swedes, the whiteness of the Swedes. That's the problem. If someone is, called, Andreas, and someone is called Mohammed, then Mohammed is the one who should get the job. I'm paraphrasing, but that was basically the quotes that she's been caught making, and the way she's, looked down on Swedish culture and says, we don't have anything in Sweden. It's all, Midsummer's poles and meatballs, jokingly trying to say those kinds of things. I mean, it's a self-hatred here that is unparalleled,
Yeah, no, I think it's this sort of situation where integration has failed so miserably that the politicians are trying so hard to create a sense of community, saying, oh, but Swedes are so lame. You guys are the real Swedes. And, Reinfeldt, what did he say again? He said, Swedish culture is barbaric. All developments have come from abroad. And Anders Borg said, in 10 years' time, Sweden will look more like Africa. All these very, very surreal quotes. But I think it's desperate attempts at integrating people, making them feel like they're Swedish, but it's failing miserably.
Well, it is. And at what costs is this supposed to occur? Because, let's just face it, it's the crime rates, the rape epidemic, the issues of more violent crimes, etc., have literally skyrocketed in Sweden to epidemic proportions. And this was, you had the odd cases here and there, you always do, that's just how it is, but the fact is, these are major cultural differences that has occurred within the last 20-30 years, and despite this, people are surprised when when you actually look at reality, and then they choose to go for something like the Swedish Democrats, but because they realize that the situation is unattainable, that it's not going to be able to work in the way that they have envisioned their future, multicultural rainbow utopia. It's just not going to happen,
Yeah, it's funny with the crime epidemic, so to speak, because you have this this professor in criminology, I think it's called in English, this Jerzy Sarnecki, who, even though they're grossly overrepresented in anmälningar, reports of crime, he kind of explains it that it's only socioeconomic factors and people like to report, women like to report rape more often now. And then you have the very broad term for rape and so on. So there's always a reason why it's increasing, but it's never related to culture or the fact that cultural differences are causing it. And you have so-called white pixelation in the media, whereas if it's a Swedish person who has committed a crime, it's very clear, we're looking for a Swedish man or there's a picture of him. But then when there's an immigrant, it doesn't say anything. The cops will go out and say, oh, someone was, raped in the park. We're looking for two men.
Yeah, look at, exactly. Never name, never picture, never anything like that. But, then you have situations where, they even used the term Swedes, for example, when you have fighters going down to, in some cases, join ISIS, and in some cases, joining the opposition to fight ISIS, streaming out of Sweden. They call them Swedes are now, joining ISIS,
Yeah.
And it's like, what? It's like, just come on. I mean, this is ridiculous. So everyone knows it, but the absurdity comes into the picture where they refuse to recognize what's going on. These are not Swedes that are taking up arms and fighting ISIS down in Syria. These are Syrians,
It's actually funny, the exception that proves the rule. Just the other day, there was actually an extremely, super Swede that actually had traveled down with his family. Just the other day, he was blonde and blue-eyed and so on.
Oh, my God, you're kidding, huh?
No, I'm serious. It was just the other day.
Well, I wonder why that resulted in. I wonder what, you know, years of self-hatred, and you have to join the cause, you know, right? Who knows?
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but it's a very absurd situation where you're supposed to pretend like there isn't a problem. But I mean, that feels very, very Swedish. You know, if you have the alcoholic, you know, family member who you're not allowed to mention at family, at Christmas, you know, at the dinner, you're not allowed to say that there's, you know, a problem. Everyone has to pretend that everything's just peachy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Look the other way. Never address the issue. We actually had a psychologist on the show talking about this, that, you know, due to the state-driven parental authoritarianism that exists within Sweden, but at the same time, it is this, as you explained very well before, and just again to clarify, that's not directed against immigrants. It's actually everybody. This condescending manner towards people, and the way that the kids in Sweden are brought up with these velvet gloves, and they never encounter, now they do, but in the past they never encountered any issues or problems really. It wasn't, and it, everything was like perfectly planned and laid out for you, you know, and that social structure has now created an environment, the psychologist said, where Swedes are incapable of dealing with any kind of conflict or conflict resolution, which is leading to the scenario that you're so talking about, of never addressing the reality of the situation.
Yeah. No, I mean, I had another many reasons for writing about these issues and focusing on spending a lot of time and energy on it. It was I was in Örebro. I'd just come back from an African country where I'd been partying. I was there on vacation with a couple of friends. And we'd been clubbing there, and you know, there were actually a lot of, you know, Europeans there, but it was very fun. And then I went to Örebro, the Swedish city, a week later when I came home, and we went to partying. And in the club, I kid you not, we were the only white people in the club. There was, yeah, you know, 200 people, and they no, we were the only ones. And I didn't mind, you know, it was fun. It was a bit surreal that there were more, non-Europeans in the club than in Africa. But then we had a really good time, and then we left the club, and we were walking and laughing on the street. And then these two guys of Eastern African origin, probably Somalia and Ethiopia. One of them, you know, he targets the smallest guy that we were walking with, blonde and blue-eyed. And just, you know, shoulder barges him and goes up in his face and, you know, says, "What is your problem, you know, Svenne?" Which is a derogatory term for Swedish. And I immediately get very angry, and I take him by the collar and I throw him down in the snow. And I've been taught that you're not supposed to kick people who are on the ground. And then he puts his hand behind his back and says, you know, "Get down on your knees or I'm going to shoot you in the face." And, I got down on my knees and, very disturbing. And I got my, beat up, and then I called the police. And then when I was supposed to describe it, I realized, you know, okay, yeah, it's a black guy, 20 to 25 from East Africa, you know, wearing a black leather jacket, white shoes. And good luck finding that guy. And, yeah. And I remember the whole time I was thinking, you know, this guy is ruining everything that all the well-integrated immigrants have worked for. You know, this gives them a bad reputation, and I'm never going to allow myself to sink so low as to blame, you know, his group or saying that, you know, all Somalis are bad, you know. But I just got so angry at the society and the media and the politicians for creating people like him, for, ruining it for immigrants, basically. I never thought to think that it's immigrants' fault. I just despise the fact that the media. And then when I got the police report, it said, you know, a black male. I mean, there's a big difference between someone from, you know, Congo and someone from Somalia.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to write that. I mean, how are they going to find the guy they're looking for?
Well, that's racial profiling, you know. So we can't do that. And there's nothing they can do. Their hands are tied against their backs. But it seems to me that if it's they're very willing to jump on any accusations of, let's say, racism or hate speech or like directed, if there happens to be a guy who's white, you know, that's targeting someone who's not white, what have you, that immediately the racism charges are there. However, it's never, ever recognized that there's racism against Swedes in Sweden. And this is a huge problem that a lot of people experience. I've experienced this myself, and I experienced it running into in the early days when I was growing up, and the encounters I had with a lot of the immigrants were usually very violent, and it was something that I was not accustomed to. This was when immigration really started to take off, you know, in the 90s, mid-late 90s, and it was a completely different culture shock. And I think, again, at the recognition that there isn't cultural conflicts going on, and that there are issues based on this level, that they have their ethnocentrism that drives them very hard, maybe even more so because of the fact that they feel that they are, you know, a minority against Swedes, etc., but that this antagonism exists, and that this occurs within the society when you take people and just jumble them together. That's really the problem in this situation, I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, when that was another trigger when I was studying law, and they had this discrimination laws, and everyone was covered except Swedes.
Mm-hmm.
As in, everyone had these special rights, and hate speech, for example, can't be directed at Swedes. And the problem is that you recognize that there are minorities, but you're not allowed to say that there's a Swedish ethnicity. And I could see straight away that, my God, you know, what about in 20 years time when Swedes are, ethnic Swedes are a minority, but they can never be a minority legally because, you know, a second generation, Kurdish guy is Swedish as well. And you have racism against Swedes all the time. You know, girls especially, they experience, you know, svennehora, which is a Swedish whore, and those kind of terms. And, you know, I find it terrible that this is happening, and I'm very lucky because I don't look super Swedish, so I can actually go to the ghettos no problem. But I find it problematic that my blonde and blue-eyed friends will receive quite bad treatment.
Yeah, it's never recognized. It's not going to work in the long run. And you know, just look at the demographics again. I mean, Somalis, they're about 10.4 million people, and that's less than Swedes. I mean, ethnic Swedes, you'd say it's probably around 7 million, and the rest are accounted for are probably immigrants in Sweden. So again, it's like this double standard and this complete utter insanity over the fact that these are a minority. And I mean, I'm more hard line on this issue. I don't see that this is going to end well. I don't think that this is good for anybody, really, to create this situation that is now occurring within Sweden. But despite that, I think that, I mean, Swedish people need to look the truth, you know, in the eyeball, whatever you call it, and actually recognize what is happening and the fact that they are being targeted on this level. And I mean, let's talk about this stuff because you put up the clip yourself, but when we hear things like Barbara Spector, we hear that Israel is actually paying, you know, African immigrants that came to their country about $2,000 to $3,000 American dollars to go to seek asylum in Sweden and effectively promise, sign a contract, never to try to return into Israel again. We have people speaking, you know, negatively about that Swedes are the problem, etc. These are real issues where Swedes are being targeted for who they are. This is a racist ideology that is being targeted against the Swedes. What do you think about someone like Barbara Spector and what the agenda really there is? Because, I mean, that's serious if that's the case, you know, things that she's talking about. That, in some other countries, in some other scenarios, that would be considered to be actually falling under the banner of genocide. If you look at the UN, you know, the Constitution, and you know, or what attributes that to genocide, that's part of the problem here, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a small fragment on that because I'd heard about it. Someone sent it to me, and you know, it was the most interesting thing I've ever written because I realized that just like when you write critically about Islamists, you know, when you wrote about Israel or, you know, Jewish people, it's very ingrained in this mentality that you're not allowed to criticize. And I, you know, if you look at the clip, you're judging from that. I don't know her, but you could say that, you know, she is a, you know, Jewish supremacist.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tiny minority. There's white supremacists, there's black supremacists, and, you know, so on. I mean, I've heard the conspiracy theory, but I find it hard to believe. And I mean, if there's proof of, you know, Israel sending or some people sending people up here, I don't know. I find it more reasonable, more probable that you have, that the fact that the migration business is so lucrative. And if you look at the numbers there, a company, for example, are paid on average $40 per asylum seeker per day. And some of these companies, you know, you can imagine if they have 10,000 asylum seekers that they're providing housing for, then they're receiving $40 times 10,000 per day.
Yeah.
So I think you have a financial incentive. They have companies that want that. I find the fact that someone would want to eradicate the Swedish, you know, population or ethnicity. I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think that what you're talking about is definitely the ground level. It's like not the intellectual driving force are those who are behind the financial gains of the immigration industry. You have, of course, wage dumping as part of it, and this is, of course, the moderates, that their driven agenda to try to, you know, get not recognize culture, ethnicity differences, but just let's bring in as many people as possible. I mean, even his latest outburst was actually to say, he said that he flies over Sweden regularly, and there's tons of room. I don't understand what people are talking about. Just, you know, just bring the whole world into Sweden. Just level all the forest and fill out, you know, fill in the lakes and the marshes and just build, like, you know, asylum, facilities all over northern Sweden, and that's what we shall become. I mean, it's like the costs are not recognized, and even the aspect of recognizing that, you know, who made Sweden successful? The Swedish people, you know, who have toiled in the fields and fought wars over territory and resources, even sometimes the most bloodiest battles with their neighboring countries, the Norwegians and the Danes. And, you know, there is a recognition there that the people themselves have achieved something. And I'm just wondering that if the people themselves who fought for all these things, just as another people have fought for their territory in their country, wherever they're at, that this is not something to be handed over to someone else. I mean, and doing it on this level, but at the same time, you know, basically looking down the way that they are on the native Swedish people. I think it's a horrible crime what's occurring.
Yeah. I mean, if we look at some of the reasons for this, I mean, I think that there's, you know, one is the humanitarian thing, this ingrained belief that we're very rich and we must help. We must become a humanitarian superpower. I think that gives you some leverage politically as well, like politicians and such, if they, you know, do a lot on the humanitarian sector, it can be a bargaining chip in international relations, for example. I also think that ideologically, I think the socialists and the former communists, that they want a new lower class, a new working class. If you look at the ghettos and the immigrant neighborhoods, then you have a majority of the population votes red. And yeah. I think that's the importing voters, in a sense, as horrible as that sounds. And yeah, I think the moderates, they want to smash the welfare sector and, you know, dump wages. And I think maybe, just maybe, to uphold the housing bubble, so as to not let it burst, you increase the population by 1%. That's bound to create to inflate the bubble further.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of different reasons that I think together coincide, and I think it's easy to get bogged into one thing and say, oh no, it's definitely like this. I think there's lots of factors at play. You know, maybe guilt from World War II. You know, we. No, but definitely. I mean, Sweden had this, you know, biology museum. What was that institution? They sterilized a lot of people that were considered, you know, inferior.
Well, this was fashionable at the time. You know, this is. I mean, look at America had it, Britain had it, Germany had it. I mean, it was it's a different time. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying that it was like, again, imposing a different attitude and moral stance of something that occurred, you know, soon coming up on 100 years here, is just insane and attributing that guilt onto people who are alive today, for example. But you're right, they're using that, they're piggybacking on that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's very, very strange. I, you know, whenever I hear about this white guilt, I'm like, yeah, but what is a newborn Rwandan Hutu supposed to feel guilty because, you know, his grandparents killed, you know, Tutsis and during the Rwandan genocide?
Never hear about that.
Yeah, and, you know, when I saw this clip of Jesse Jackson in Sweden,
saying that,
you know, we built our industry on slave trade. I mean, that's just a lie. There were like, what, like four people or something that's private entrepreneurs. It wasn't the government, you know. We enslaved each other, actually. You know.
Exactly. We had the thrall system, and yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so, I mean, and Swedes were taken as slaves abroad as well. I mean, this isn't merely a black and white issue.
It is certainly not, exactly. Well, these are all very good points, and obviously when we return here in the second segment a little bit, we're going to take a break here shortly, but we're going to talk more about the recent change of the our version of the Constitution, the way that they're seeking to criminalize criticism of not only the power structure, but immigration itself and these policies and everything, and just talk more about the overall climate of what is occurring in Sweden, and also talk about the future of where all this is going if it continues as it is. But, you know, before we take a short break, let's just give out your website so people know where to go to, you know, follow your articles and just kind of watching and monitoring some of the insanity that is occurring in Sweden.
Yeah. I mean, my website is www.swedishsurveyor.com in one word. And, you know, I write about different issues. I'm relatively new at writing, so I appreciate, you know, if people think that I should, you know, remove something or add something, then I'm happy to receive constructive criticism. So, yeah. And if you want to learn more about Sweden, just check it out.
Right. Great. SwedishSurveyor.com. We'll have the website up on ours, so you can find it easily from there. All right. Well, we'll take a short break here, Fredrik. Stay with us, and we'll be right back. right, folks, as you regulars know, we'll pick this up in the second hour here as we get started after the break together with Swedish Surveyor. We have much more to discuss and get into topics pertaining to the many issues plaguing our country, its people, our politicians, and the massive influx of immigration into the country. We'll talk more about Robert Aschberg and his Troll Hunters TV show, hunting down what they deem to be haters on comment sections on websites. And we discuss socialist overrepresentation in the state-funded media and state feminism. We also go into Australia and discuss some of their examples of what they have done to lessen the influx of immigration. They have even literally blown up boats that have tried to get to the island. We discuss the lack of political will to try to deter these boats from reaching Europe and eventually finding their way up to Sweden too. The system that's in place that gives you something for free is the incentive. And as long as this is the case, there will be a price to pay further down the road. We discuss ISIS sleeper cells and fighters going from northern countries to join with or fight against ISIS. We talk about the migration industry, the tanking economy, and much more. So join us at redicemembers.com for more. Sign up and tune in, download or stream. We have also RSS feeds with all our past shows so that you can download anything from the website if you so please. We have also all the instructions on how to get the full show on your mobile device using a podcast app. We have another program in our Sweden series coming up a little bit later here as well with Konrad from Radio Länsman. This is coming up next week. But we also have Laird Scranton, Marion Bencourt, Tim Murdoch, and many more after that. So please join us here in the second hour at redicemembers.com with Fredrik, the Swedish Surveyor, for more. We'll be right back.